Support comes from the Janis Hawkins Cultural Arts Park on the main campus of Troy University. Featuring the International Arts Center, the Fred Nall Hollis Museum, and the Hua Baoju Gallery. More information at troy.edu/artspark.
From Troy Public Radio and the College of Communication and Fine Arts at Troy University, I'm Scott Sexton.
And I'm Diane Orlovsky.
And you are listening to Inquire, conversations about choral music, the arts, and life.
In this podcast, we want to tell you the stories behind the songs. We want to go directly to composers and thinkers and supporters of arts to learn how they explore sound and universal text and shared human experiences.
We've been listening to the very beginning of a piece titled She Was Wilderness by award-winning Canadian composer Katarina Gimmon. Her music has been called eclectic, dynamic, and poignant. And as we will hear throughout this piece, she draws many musical styles and takes the listener through layered textures, intense emotions, and shared human experiences.
In fact, we've titled this episode Boundless, which shares the name of one of her earliest compositions for these very reasons. I cannot wait to unpack this provocative and many-layered piece. So welcome to Inquire, Katarina.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to dive into She Was Wilderness.
You know, I was listening to another podcast interview where you said one line that just stuck out to me, and it was, quote, "The choir is my instrument," end quote. And I thought to myself, I can really relate to that sentiment. Can you share more about your compositional ethos?
So I guess in a way, I've always composed. I just didn't know it was composing at first. I thought it was just me being bad at my piano lessons because I used to, instead of learning the music I was supposed to, I'd just take it and I'd riff off of it, or I'd turn it into something else or make up my own thing. And so, you know, it took eventually finding the right teacher to have someone recognize that in me for what it was, that creative instinct. And so, you know, years later, I found a wonderful voice teacher who was also, her name is Linda Fletcher. I should give her credit, you know, where credit is due. She was also a composer, and she noticed that in me and would encourage me to write down the things that I was exploring and eventually like enter them into Kiwanis music festivals and different festivals I was competing in where I'd sing and perform this music. And that was really where things began for me. So I really started out in that world and got nourished through that vein by my wonderful singing teacher. But at the same time, I joined a choir sort of while this was happening, a wonderful local choir called the Hamilton Children's Choir in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. And that was where everything finally, I think, clicked for me because I loved writing music and I enjoyed performing, but I think I missed that connection that I got and that I found in choral music. And I had so many incredible experiences that I can still like trace back my obsessions compositionally and why I do what I do from that time in choir. And so basically those two things permeated and simmered in the stew until when I went to go to university. Although I didn't enter university with the plan of becoming a composer, after taking my first year composition elective and deciding as part of my end of year project to write my first ever choral work, which you referenced, called Boundless, I wrote that. And it was the first time I think I combined that love for songwriting and my love for choral music in one place. And I think, you know, I was hooked. From then on, I was like, I have to do this. I have to find a way to do this because then I can stay in choir forever if I just write for choir, right?
Back to She Was Wilderness, you know, this was premiered in 2021. One of the things that immediately drew me to your music was your treatment to texture in your choral compositions. I believe in some chords in this piece, we hear the rich vitality of nature, and in some chords, we hear dissonance that might represent the anguish that some feel about our current environmental trajectory. Can you talk to us about the use of text painting and vocal layering within the piece?
For me, I think that was something that was born out of my exploration as an improviser. I started exploring improvising and got really interested in the different ways that I could use my voice, but also the voice in a choral context to achieve different textures. Because, I mean, if you have, you know, if you're a painter, you wouldn't just use primary colors, right? You have different colors you can mix, different textures you can achieve. And I think I really thought of all the things that I was discovering in my voice, whether in those improvisational worlds or even in different genres of music. How could I take those things and use them to, like you said, show anguish? And I think that particular moment, you're probably talking about, you know, three quarters of the way through this work, I have a texture where we have, you know, traditional choral singing and these beautiful chords, and over top, we have this layered cacophonous shouting. And I think the combination of something like that, although, you know, untraditional, helps us reach different colors and also different emotional heights. And so I became very, very interested in how I could do that.
Yeah, we're going to go do a deep dive into that section, because that was something that kind of grabbed the both of us and just made us dig deeper and deeper into all of it. So we're going to pause now, and we're going to listen to about the first minute and a half of She Was Wilderness. Been listening to a little of the opening of She Was Wilderness by Vancouver-based composer Katarina Gimmon. Okay, Katarina, I wish we could linger just a bit in the beauty and wholeness and tranquility of that, you know, first section. But what follows in this piece is your musical choral treatment of something that are basically describing, I think, what's becoming an increasingly shared global crisis. Scott, do you agree that this section kind of unnerves and almost serves as a collective, like, wake-up cry?
Yeah, I think we really hear a shift in this section. It's really one big buildup until we hear the text ungrateful. We hear all these ungrateful, ungrateful, ungrateful. And we hear shifting tonalities, uneasy rhythms. And while it is truly beautiful, we start to hear, or at least I think, we start to hear underlying irritation and frustration more and more due to the unresolved and rhythm and harmony. Personally, I haven't heard a climax in the piece that has been so intentional in a while. And all listeners will hear the release of tension and frustration that takes us into the last section, where we experience Katarina's brilliance and hear her fresh and contemporary compositional approach to texture. The treatment of the text ungrateful will truly stick in your ear as a cry and a plea.
for me, I think this entire piece was about getting to a point, and this is, these are some words that I accidentally came up with on the fly when I was working with a local group on this piece a couple of weeks ago. And the way I worded it to them is, we need to sort of present what's at stake and build up all of the feelings, you know, that we're feeling related to this, and get to that point of chaos to basically like rip the audience's heart out. In a way, because then we can, only then can we truly understand the weight of what all of this means and get to that place where we get to the final stanza. And when I composed this work, that was very intentional, the way that I did that. And the first thing I composed was actually that ending section, which we haven't talked about yet, but it's part of the reason that the rest of the piece, you know, leading up to the moment that we're speaking about now with Ungrateful and this big chaotic moment, that everything I knew was moving towards that. And it was just looking at the different colors of, okay, at the beginning here, we're sort of in this state of, you know, of fantasy, really. I mean, the world is beautiful, but we're under this illusion that things are going to stay the same.
I never thought about it that way.
And so, I mean, it's at once beauty, but also a little bit of that illusion, and why we sort of have that sudden change that begins into this tumbling texture when we get into the second stanza. Because that is broken, almost like a poof. You know, this was a movie or something.
Yeah.
It's broken, and we're realizing, you know, we're not standing still in this moment of time. Things are changing, maybe on a scale that is hard for us, you know, on as humans to understand or to comprehend or to really take in the weight of things. But things are changing, and what does this mean?
I don't think I've ever heard a piece quite like this. I've been listening to it as on my morning walks, you know, over kind of on a loop, you know, over and over and over. It's moving. There I am out in nature, but it's not in a comfortable way. But, you know, isn't that perhaps what this art form should be doing?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, I love that. It means a lot that you're listening to it on your morning walks. I'd never imagined that, you know, out where it's meant to be.
It has seeped into my consciousness. Mm-hmm. You know, which I think is a wonderful thing. So let's spend a little time together listening to this section that we've been talking about.
You've been listening to She Was Wilderness, as sung by the Vancouver Chamber Choir. And we are speaking with the composer of this fascinating work, Katarina Gimmon.
Okay, so, you know, we've talked about this first section, which you put in a new frame for me. You talked about the middle section. Now we're going to get to this next section where you've kind of alluded to it. Your use of spoken word on top of the singers, and we're, again, sensing now it's moved us to a different, maybe not from being uncomfortable to, I don't know, feeling the anger, anxiety, and fear. You know, it's almost like the human race is admitting to their collective guilt, perhaps, you know, for not caring for the world. And I was listening the other day on the walk and going, what are they saying? You know, what are they saying? And when a deep dive into the score, these are perhaps either suggested lines or some of the lines that we are hearing. So things like raging wildfires, powerful hurricanes, floods and droughts.
Destroyed habitats, declining biodiversity, dwindling and dying species.
Record-breaking storms, destructive wildfires, swallowing villages whole.
Ever-climbing temperatures, heat waves boiling sea creatures alive.
And so on. And there's a note in the score that says, basically, you can say your own line. Can you talk to us about this particular structure of the piece?
Yeah, so for me, I tend to do this a lot, even when I'm setting new poetry. The thing about, I guess, a contemporary poetry is it has a life, a spoken life, and a life on the page. But the second you're bringing it into music, it's existing in time now in a different way. And I think sometimes that means there's certain places where we'll need more time for a certain idea to sink in or to pace things out before we get to the next section. And this was functionally one of those moments. We had gotten to this point where we've now described, you know, what there was, what it's becoming. Mm-hmm. And it didn't feel like we had gotten far enough before we got to, and here's what the future could look like if we don't make a change. So this section for me was a way of diving truly into the present world, you know, into what is happening now. And it's sourced from a UN document that was presented just before this piece was premiered. And it was a code red, I believe is what it was.
A code red, a death knell, an alarm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what it was. A code red, a death knell, an alarm. And a lot of those other words are sourced from headlines and things that were happening in the world around us, like mm-hmm. the boiling sea creatures alive because of the record temperatures and wildfires. And that last note that you made about being able to put in different sentences of our own was my way of saying, you know, this is evolving and it's also going to vary based on where people are in the world. So I want that to be a collection of all the things, you know, that are meaningful or are especially meaningful, I should say, to different people, to different groups so they can make it their own. So that's what that was for me. And that section really became like in a movie. Or a documentary, you know, when you get to those heart-wrenching moments and you're suddenly having these images and views of different landscapes and news events happening. So that's sort of what it was meant to be like. So as an audience, when you experience that, I think it's harder to hear in the recording. So I hope everyone will get a chance to hear this live. When you're surrounded by the choir and they're all speaking those different lines, your ear will wander and it'll hear, the sea creatures, temperatures are rising, and it'll move around and your ear will get drawn to different things. And I think a really interesting way, almost like when you're looking at a painting and you're seeing, you know, when I stand here, I see something different than when I'm standing there. And so that was sort of the idea for me when I composed that section.
My favorite sung line in that section is an alto solo, I believe. And it's almost to me as if in my mind, Mother Earth is singing her lament toward the end of that section. I mean, that is such a beautiful part for me.
That's exactly what it was, actually. So maybe I did my job right. That's what I was thinking. I mean, I never write these things in the score because you always want to leave space for people to think of it in their own. But I think that's what it was for me. And you'll notice that solo and the melody recurs a couple of times.
Yeah.
So I didn't want it to be, I think the alto solo ends up doing it a couple more times and then a soprano joins in later. But I didn't want it to be, you know, one particular voice type or one person or anything. It's more the idea of the earth itself. Being like, this is what I once was, and truly lamenting that.
I'm going to challenge the audience to see if they can hear one of these lines or even perhaps think about you and your environment around you and what kind of troubles you about it, and join the choir in that.
are what we need to save her.
Katerina, I've listened to some of your previous interviews, and you mentioned your intentionality as an environmental activist and its presence in your music. What do you hope the impact of the message of She Was Wilderness will be? Talk to us about that.
I think for this piece, you know, my main goal is to break down any barriers that, you know, we personally or as a society may have so that we can take in this message in a way that can result in us even making one small change in our lives. Because I think with issues like this that are so huge and so momentous, it can feel almost pointless, I think, or hopeless to even begin sometimes. And so I think my goal or my hope would be that we understand the weight of it, but we also realize that, you know, it doesn't take much. It takes a lot of people trying imperfectly to make a difference and to make a change, and it's worth it. It's worth trying, even if we can't be perfect, because that's how I think we move forward. So,
as we close the final section of She Was Wilderness, there's a line from the nursery rhyme Rockabye Baby that says, when the bough breaks, right? And that line appears in what we hear in the last section. So my question to you is that line hopeful? Is it a cautionary tale? Or is that something that you want the listener to be the judge of?
I've left the door open, and you'll notice that's the last line in the poem, but it's not where I end the piece. I actually repeat some of the words afterwards.
Right.
So it goes, and only when the last bough breaks will the people learn. And I thought if I left it at that point, then it would be a bit too discouraging to just say, and this is what it will be. And so I brought back fragments of things happening before and sort of like this coda section montage to say, this is still evolving, and it's the door is open, and it's really up to us what happens next and if this will happen or how much this will happen. So it's in progress, I will say. This is still happening, and I think that's the beauty of art like this. So
Well, we're going to let the listeners decide for themselves as we listen to this, and then we'll circle back to talk to you. We really do want to thank you, Katerina, for using what we've talked about as your compositional platform to give kind of voice to issues that we all share.
Thank you, Katerina, for joining us today and sharing your awesome music. We really appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
You've been listening to Inquire, conversations about choral music, the arts, and life. Inquire is produced and edited in the studios of Troy Public Radio by Austin Toy, Kyle Gassett, and Diane Orlovsky.
Our production assistant is Kensley Fuller.
Our logo was designed by Rachel Arnold. Special thanks to the College of Communication and Fine Arts and Dean Michael Thrasher.
Please subscribe to the Inquire podcast and let others know about us. You can also leave a review in the podcast platform of your choice. It will help others find the show. We hope you join us again for more conversations about choral music, the arts, and life. This is Inquire. I'm Diane Orlovsky.
And I'm Scott Sexton.
Thank you for listening.